Hello, nice of you to drop by. I gather you're interested in Lichterfelde. So am I, or I was a few weeks ago, and that was when I had a really weird experience. It was my first visit, and I wanted to explore the place for my bachelor's thesis at university. It was a lovely, sunny day, there was a gentle breeze, but they'd forecast thunderstorms in the evening. So I was in a hurry. I hopped off the S-Bahn, walked out of the station, glanced around the forecourt, and then all of a sudden...
Oh, whoops-a-daisy. You all right, love? What happened there? Would you believe there was this gust of wind and it caught me up and propelled me all the way to the Potsdam railway station? But all I wanted to do was quickly... Oh, well, honestly. And you know what? This place doesn't look right. Not right at all. Excuse me. Young man. Yeah, you there.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, of course. Who else would I be talking to? You've just arrived and I imagine you're new here in Lichterfelde, aren't you? Paid the suburban rate on the Potsdam Railway for a quick getaway from the hustle and bustle of the big city, eh?
Suburban rate? A quick getaway? What are you talking about?
Ah, well, you're not the only one. At the weekends, our lovely Lichterfelde is packed with day trippers, and some even stay. More than 1,000 city folk move out here every year, and for good reasons. Though you'd need to be sufficiently well-to-do, wouldn't you? Still, you look quite tolerable to me. Young, educated, very well-bred, probably from a good family. Is your papa... wait a minute. A general? Or a major general, at least? No? Maybe a judge? Or a professor? Or perhaps a successful architect?
Excuse me? My father? What on earth does he have to do with it?
Well, no need to be coy. We're entirely entre nous, as we say in Lichterfelde. The toffs have all found bolt holes here, in lovely Lichterfelde, to get away from the city, crowded and hectic and airless as it is. And for us, I'm talking about housemaids here, that can only be a good thing. Otherwise, I'd probably be milking cows or working in the fields, because I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. But now that we have our villa estate, I can make a living working for a posh, wealthy family.
Well...
And that's a great deal nicer than earthing up spuds. At least that's what I think.
Well...
But of course, that's nothing to do with you. You're just another swanky posh boy.
Well, I think there's been a mix-up here. I'm afraid you're mistaking me for someone else.
Me? Mistaking you?
Yes, suburban fare, Potsdam Railway, none of that makes any sense. And, of course, my father's not a general. And anyway, I've just come out to Lichterfelde on the S-Bahn to make a few inquiries for my upcoming bachelor's thesis, that's all.
What? S-Bahn? Bachelor? What on earth are you going on about?
I'm an architecture student, and my bachelor's thesis will deal with urban planning principles as they apply to the Lichterfelde villa estate. With special consideration of the settlement concepts, which promote closeness to nature and the separation of life and work in the early 20th century.
Ah, so you are a student. I knew it. But never you mind, young man. Each according to his abilities and means, right? And you're in luck. I can help you if you like.
Yes, all right.
No one knows their way around Lichterfelde better than Martha Poschunke. Me.
Pleased to meet you. I'm Alex.
Except... There's one thing I've been wanting to ask you all this time. Somehow, everything here looks different. Everywhere you look, there are motor cars, brightly coloured and flat as pancakes. And our West Bazaar, where I was planning to pick up a few odds and ends...
The West Bazaar?
Yes, the big half-timbered building here on the station forecourt. First right. Place where you can buy all your everyday essentials. Nobody ever needs to trail to Berlin for a bit of shopping anymore. Those days are over. But hold on. There's a grocer shop just a few streets away. I can get everything I need there. Do you want to come along?
Sure. Okay.
Just straight ahead for now, as far as the next crossroads. Come on, no dawdling. Now we just walk straight down Karlstrasse. past the picture-perfect Emish house on the left with its stylish griffins on the facade. That house was recently bought by a seriously wealthy textile manufacturer's son who opened a bank in there.
Well, that doesn't seem to have survived. But if we want to sit down, there's a bench on the opposite side of the road. The red round one.
Yes, and we'll actually be going that way. Do you need to take a rest? Well, that's fine too. And afterwards, we carry on walking along Karlstrasse.
Karlstrasse, Karlstrasse. Tell me, Miss Martha, which Karlstrasse are you talking about?
This one. The street that crosses Kurtiusstrasse.
Oh, you mean Basler Straße?
No, it's only called Basler Straße further on. It was renamed last year. This bit is still Karlstrasse.
But look at the street signs. They clearly say Basler Straße.
So they do. What on earth has happened here?
Hold on. You said part of the street was renamed last year, right? What year was that?
Well, last year. 1908, of course.
1908? So, this is...
1909. Yes. What did you think it was?
Well, I'm sorry to tell you this, and please don't get upset, but this is the 20s. The 2020s. More than 100 years after your time.
More than 100 years? I think my head is going to explode.
And that's why the motor cars, as you called them, come in such weird shapes and colours.
And I suppose that's why Karlstrasse isn't called Karlstrasse anymore. Oh, it must have been that gust of wind earlier. It swept me right into this funny time vortex or something.
Yes, you appear, if I can put it like this, to have been caught up in a time slip. But that's no problem at all, and as far as I'm concerned, it's actually very useful, because you know all about the villa estate of Lichterfelde West in the early years.
Nah, young man, early years? That sounds a bit optimistic to me. By now, talking about my time here, the villa estate is several decades old. It all started in 1865. That's more than 40 years ago. Or... more than a century and a half, from your point of view. I'll tell you all about it, don't worry. But if you want to take another look around while we're here, by the round red bench, on the other side of the street, you see the elegant Emish house, the one that belongs to the wealthy banker. And beyond it, at the end of the street, is the station served by the Potsdam Railway.
In other words, the S-Bahn station Lichterfelde West.
If you insist. Precisely. And, ooh, does anything catch your eye, architecturally speaking?
Like what?
The little tower. I'm sure you're a well-travelled young man, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, of course, but...
it's from Italy.
Italy?
Indeed. Florence and Tuscany and all that. Or so I've been told, anyway. I've never been that way myself. But they say those little towers are everywhere down there. In some of the villages, people even competed with each other, building towers.
Yes, in San Gimignano.
May well be. In any case, it's the same here in Lichterfelde.
What is?
People here have also been having little tower-building competitions. Come along, I'll show you. As I said, we're carrying on along Karlstrasse, Basler Straße. Here, behind that elegant cream-coloured house, you need to keep to the left and turn off onto Potsdamer Straße. My word, it's a relief to see that at least Potsdamer Straße is still called Potsdamer Straße.
But, Martha, what were you saying about little towers?
Hold on a minute. No need to rush. Let's walk on and I'll tell you what I know. Do you see? On the next house, immediately to your left, it says... 1894 on the bay window. 30 years earlier, in around 1865, there were just two tiny villages here, Lichterfelde and Giesensdorf. And then Karsten came along.
Karsten?
Mm-hmm. Johann Anton Wilhelm von Karsten, from Holstein, way up north. Another wealthy chap. He bought up the two villages of Lichterfelde and Giesensdorf along with the estate surrounding them because he'd understood one thing. People wanted to get out of the city. No more mangy tenements, no more coal dust in winter, no more stench, and streets littered with horse manure. Ugh. They wanted peace and quiet, and plenty of greenery and nice big homes, and, if possible, even their own villa with a garden.
Of course, who wouldn't want that?
And that's why Carsten bought acres and acres of land down here, outside the city gates, parcelled it out into plots, laid out streets, major thoroughfares and little roads, and even squares. And he generally saw to it that a new, beautiful residential area could grow up here.
A villa estate.
Exactly. It was an idea he'd brought back with him from England. That kind of thing was all the rage over there. Carsten first tried out his idea in Hamburg, and when it was successful, he came to Berlin.
And that was another success?
Not really.
No, but...
No, at least not at first, because what Carsten hadn't reckoned with was the economic slump. A few years later, after the war of 1870 to 71, the empire's economy was on its knees. It was the same everywhere. People no longer had the money to build fancy houses, and if they did still have some cash, they preferred not to spend it.
Oh, the Founders' Crash and the First Great Depression.
Founders' Crash? First Great Depression? Yes, that may well be your name for it, in the 21st century. Anyway, Carsten had to work out how to save his villa estate. He needed to persuade people to move here, build their mansions after all.
So what did he do?
Now, hold on to your hat. He gave the building plots away.
He what?
Yes, gave them away. To the state. In other words, to the German Empire.
To the state?
That's right. A whopping 92 acres.
92 acres? That's a vast amount of land.
Oh, yes.
Wait a minute. An acre is a quarter of a hectare, so that's more than 20 hectares. That's about 30 football fields, the size of a small town.
Exactly. Quite a lot of land. But there was one condition attached to the donation. The government had to move the cadet training school, the College for Future Officers, from Gendarmenmarkt in Berlin to here and build on the whole 92 acres. Everything else was for free. Land, transport links, water supply and sewage system. He donated it all. Carsten even had the building materials brought here for free.
That was clever.
Not so much, sadly, because this whole business almost drove old Carsten into his grave. But I'll tell you more about that later. First, I want to show you a particularly beautiful villa here on Potsdamer Straße. Wait a minute. It was beyond Ringstraße. But before we get to Holbeinstraße, at least those streets haven't changed their names, at number... Oh, there we are, 22A. That Lichterfelde villa is world famous, and you can see why, can't you?
Because of the stepped gables? That's actually an architectural element that originated during the Romanesque period and is mainly found in northern Europe. Flanders, Holstein, Mecklenburg and places like that.
But we've got them here too. If there's anything that appeals to people, you'll find it here. And what else might appeal to them? Take a look in the front garden.
It's full of wild animals. A hissing dragon and a majestic sphinx guarding the entrance.
And there's a second one up there on the wall.
So there is.
Yes. Lichterfelder folk are not only fond of little towers, they also love the good old days.
And fairy tales, apparently.
Bolt knights errand and dangerous monsters. Yes. But the man who built this house isn't in the least backward-looking. He's very much in tune with the times. He's actually building the underground in Berlin. You know, trains that run underground. Electric ones.
Yes, I do know what an underground is.
And this man, Grenander is his name, he comes from Sweden, he's designing the trains and the stops for the new underground lines that will soon be zipping along beneath Berlin. He's putting colourful tiles on the walls down there. And the best thing is that there's a different colour for each stop, so people will always know where they are straight away, even if they can't see the signs.
Oh, yes, Alfred Grenander and his colour coding. These days, that is, in my day, he's regarded as a very important architect.
You see? And this is where he lives. Or rather, where he lived. Along with a lot of other clever people. For example, there's a brilliant woman living at number 58A, a little way further on. She's a scientist doing research on tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis?
Yes, it's a very serious disease. It attacks the lungs, and nobody really knows how people catch it. But she's doing research to find out. And that's a good thing, because people with tuberculosis are dying like flies. But not for so much longer, because Lydia Rabinovich Kempner will find a cure. I have no doubt at all. She's from Russia and went to university, against all the odds. She even had to leave the Tsarist Empire to be able to study. Then she worked without pay for years and was treated with hostility because she's just a woman, of course, and Jewish to boot. But anyone who's that persistent is going to beat the bacteria one day. I'm sure of it. Lydia Rabinovich Kempner. Mind you remember the name.
But for us, tuberculosis is no longer a problem at all.
Well, then you have her to thank for it, obviously. Now, you and me, we're going to retrace our steps. Just this side of Mrs. Rabinovich's house is Martha Strasse, and we're going to turn off into that street. Well, Alex, my lad, you'll not be confusing me with the street names again, because now we're heading down Martha Strasse, named after the most hard-working housemaid in all of Großlichterfelde.
Which would be you?
Well, of course. Oh, not really. I wish. I was just joking. Unfortunately, Martha Strasse isn't named after me. I'm not nearly important enough.
Oh, come on.
Maybe the wife of some posh moneybags who built a house here was called Martha. Or an architect's wife or something. One of the architects here on this street is actually very famous. But his wife is called Anna. And she and her husband even live here. Take a look at the houses on both sides of the street here.
They look as if they were scooped up in the Middle Ages and dropped straight into the 21st century.
Into the 20th century, or rather the late 19th century, because that was when they were built by this famous architect. I'm sure you know of him. From your university.
Now, don't keep me in suspense.
Lilienthal.
Ah.
That surprised you, didn't it?
Lilienthal. Wasn't he the flying man? An early aviation pioneer?
Of course not. Well, yes, that was Otto Lilienthal, but he's dead. He crashed more than a decade ago. No, I mean Gustav, his brother.
Oh, you mean him.
A talented architect and inventor, and someone who really cares about the little people. He thought they should also benefit from our beautiful villa estate, and not just the rich folk.
Yes, that makes sense. But why do his houses look like medieval fortresses?
Well, because everyone loves the Middle Ages. Surely you must have been a little boy once, right?
Yes, of course.
And maybe you pestered your mama until she sewed you a knight's costume and bought you a wooden sword so that you'd be properly armed when you marched forth to slay the dragon?
Yes.
There you go, then. And the Lilienthal brothers probably did the same. So, when Gustav grew up, he simply carried on with the game and invented some great things along the way. For example, there was a huge problem with lots of people living in poorly ventilated flats and with all the coal dust in Berlin's tenement buildings. Overcrowding plus poverty equals tuberculosis. It was Gustav Lilienthal who came up with a crucial idea. He installed warm air heating in his houses and hid the shafts in all the many turrets on top of his castle villas. And the windows in those houses are double glazed. The kitchens are fully furnished with beautiful practical furniture. Oh, it's great for those who live in the castle-style houses, believe me.
Besides, in architectural terms, those people are living in really exceptional houses. I think it's called Tudor style. The style was quite fashionable in the late 19th century.
Well, if you say so. Tudor? That's neither here nor there. Our Lilienthal definitely wanted everyone to thrive, not just the rich and famous, but also the skilled workers and artisans and their families. But first, he had to convince the little people to invest their hard-earned savings in one of his houses. And to ensure that people would trust him, he built a house for himself first, moved in and showed it to anyone who wanted to see it.
Oh, clever.
Wasn't it? And in no time at all, he had a pile of orders on his desk. He built more than 30 houses in Lichterfelde. Just imagine.
More than 30? My word.
Yes. You'll be seeing a few more of them as we move on. Come along, no dawdling. Now, if you look to your left here on the corner, there are two more grand examples of Lichterfelde's little towers.
Yes, so there are.
Though we're heading to the right now.
But look there, Martha, straight ahead, the bookshop. Buchhandlung Rudolf Möller. Did that exist in your day? Do you remember Rudolf Möller?
Rudolf Möller. A bookshop? You know, I don't find intellectuals all that interesting, but Lichterfelde is awash with them. Maybe Mr. Möller is one of them. We have writers, painters, architects, like you want to be, and musicians and professors and scholars here. There was even Hermann Grimm and his wife Gisela, one of the sons of Wilhelm Grimm, who is, of course, famous for his fairy tales. And she's the daughter of the writer Bettina von Arnim. Yes, the two of them had a little house here back then, though they've died since. But while we're on the subject of clever people, you must have heard of Heinrich Seidel.
Heinrich Seidel?
Yes, you know, the writer. The magic inkstand and other stories. Children's books, fairy tales. Another chap who was fond of the little people. Was, because he's dead too. But he was one of our villa estate's greatest supporters. And, of course, he lived here himself. Would you like to hear the poem he wrote about our beautiful Groß Lichterfelde?
Oh, yes, please.
I know it off by heart. Where is the finest looking view in our beloved fatherland? With pleasure I proclaim the news. It lies on Birkestrand. I should tell you that the Birke is a little stream that used to flow through Lichterfelde. But now we have the Teltow Canal because of the wastewater. It's bigger and more practical. But that's not what we're talking about here. So let's carry on with the poem. It lies on Birkestrand. As fine as any verse, this place, its aspect full of charm. So I am happy to proclaim Lichterfelde is its name.
That's a real hymn of praise for the villa estate and its residents. But tell me, Martha...
Hang on, there's a second verse. Mansions stand there, trim and neat, in gardens where I walk, with singing birds and blossom scent, and no two are alike. For every taste in this sweet place are cottages and castles bright. For everyone, this I proclaim... In Lichterfelde takes delight. Oh, that's quite something, don't you think?
Fantastic.
And he's right. It goes on for a few more verses, but I don't know them by heart. Palaces and cottages, the scent of blossoms and birdsong. Doesn't that sound romantic?
Yes, it does. And it seems true enough. We've already seen the mansions, I mean the villas and the castles.
And as we carry on walking, you'll see a lot more of them. Some have half-timbered facades and some have brickwork. Some look like real palaces with columns and stucco and such like. And the gardens are especially beautiful.
Like you said, birdsong and the scent of blossoms.
Carsten did that deliberately. He wanted the houses to be detached and completely surrounded by a garden, front and back and both sides. He didn't want people to grow fruit and vegetables in their gardens either, or have pigs and chickens running around. He wanted them to be ornamental gardens. Ornamental gardens, that's what they're called. They're meant to be for recreation. As if wealthy villa owners have a desperate need for recreation, am I right? but never mind. When we reach that little square just ahead, I'll tell you what else Carsten had in mind when he designed his housing estate. Now let's sit down on the bench and make ourselves comfortable. Why not spend some time just sitting in the sun? It's allowed, even for housemates. Fortunately, Carsten remembered to plan for some nice little squares at regular intervals. So you can always have a rest, meet the neighbours, spend some time chatting. Now, come on and sit next to me.
All right, just give me a minute. What's this stone here? Royal Prussian Cadet Corps.
Oh, that's to do with the cadets. The military are everywhere in Lichterfelde.
The military? How come?
Yes, smart, dashing lads with their fine-looking uniforms. Oh, they're a sight to behold, I can tell you.
But...
And then there are the instructors, the officers and their families, all to provide the next generation of soldiers for our empire. That was very important to Carsten, the cadet school and all.
You mean the 92 acres he handed over to the state?
Exactly. In other words, the site, including its development. The cadet school used to be somewhere in the centre of Berlin, but they ran out of room there, so they moved out here. And Carsten was even given a title in exchange for his generous donation. He became Johann Anton Wilhelm von Carsten Lichterfelde. Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yes. And yet the cadet school somehow almost drove him into his grave.
Well, how was he to know that just 2 years later there'd be a stock market crash and he'd have to go deep into debt to keep all the promises he'd made to the military? He had to build a railway line to transport the building material to the construction site free of charge. And there was building material galore. He also had to build a gasworks and waterworks, pave the roads and so on and so forth.
That was pretty careless. For a financial investor, very odd.
Well, that was right after the war. The Prussians had beaten the French. The German Reich had been founded. And people were full of enthusiasm. He did it in the spirit of patriotism. At least that's what it says on the deed of gift that was enclosed in the foundation stone. But then there was one slip-up after another. The economy went down the drain, and within a few years, Carsten was bankrupt. He tried to save himself and went to court, but he lost case after case. It's really not smart to get into an argument with the military in Prussia.
Stands to reason.
And then, at some point, he died. Poor as a church mouse.
Oh dear. All squandered.
But everything worked out just fine for Lichterfelde, because along with the thousands of officer candidates, plenty of other people moved to Lichterfelde. Teachers, civil servants, aristocratic families.
And of course, maids, gardeners and other staff.
Exactly. But now it's time for us to stop chatting. We should move on into Paulinenstrasse, diagonally to our left. There are a few more of Gustav Lilienthal's castle houses coming up on the left, with turrets and a drawbridge and all the bells and whistles.
A drawbridge?
Yes, that was another of Lilienthal's tricks. To make sure the lower ground floor had plenty of light, he simply had the plot dug out a little as if they were digging a moat. That way, the light can still get to the windows down there. And up above, you walk across the drawbridge to enter the house.
Pretty clever, eh? Yes, Lilienthal really knows every trick in the book, I can tell you that much.
Look at that! Here on the right, the red house on the corner. If you look at it from the narrow side, it looks for all the world like a Swiss chalet. But from the long side, that is, as you turn right into Weddingenweg, suddenly you're walking past a magnificent veranda, almost like in Italy.
Well, we don't just have little towers in Lichterfelde. There are also plenty of bays and cornices and crenellations and oriels, not to forget the odd dormer window, and so on and so forth.
The architectural term you're looking for is eclecticism.
What was it again?
Eclecticism. It means that artists pick and choose a wide variety of stylistic elements from various eras and regions when they design their works. And then they combine those elements to create new works. That also fits in with the period in which this entire estate was built, the time of historicism.
You mean the late 19th century, or what?
Exactly, the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century. A time when people thought incorporating as many different styles into a building as possible was a sign of sophistication. And here in Lichterfelde, it seems they literally competed with one another to see who could add the most ornaments to their house and the widest variety. But if you reduce it down to brass tacks, the houses are generally in the shape of a cube to which fanciful exterior decoration has been added.
Fanciful, you can say that again. Each family had its own architect, historicism or not. Some wanted a house in the Swiss style, others preferred a villa in the Roman or Art Nouveau style or whatever. The main thing was to have a lot of frilly bits on the facade. Keep your eyes open, you'll see that I'm right. What was the name of that place in Italy, the one where people competed with each other to build little towers?
San Gimignano.
Right. The Lichterfelde locals seem to have followed their example. Now, don't start going on about Basler Straße again. For me, this is, and always will be, Karlstraße. So there.
All right, all right.
And we need to turn right into it. By the way, there are a few more particularly beautiful verandas, turrets and oriels here. Although I must admit, I do see the occasional house I don't recognise, and their designs are somehow different.
Well, those will be the post-war buildings, I guess.
Post-war buildings? Which war would that be?
Oh, who cares? Not a particularly pleasant affair. And after your time.
Oh, well, if you say so. Are you actually aware that history was made here in Lichterfelde? I don't mean a war or anything. I'm talking about transport history.
Transport history?
Yes. And that has to do with the cadets as well. I'll tell you as we walk, it's quite a long story. Now, Carsten had agreed to have the building materials delivered to the site where they were building the cadet school.
Right. Free of charge, too.
So, he had railway tracks laid between the construction site and the station served by the Anhalt railway line.
Meaning the S-Bahn stop Lichterfelde Ost?
Possibly, maybe. In any case, that was a mile and a half of railway track that was surplus to requirements afterwards.
After the main cadet school had been built.
Exactly. Then there was this engineer called Werner Siemens.
I know about him.
Excellent. And there was another resourceful chap called Johann Georg Halske. And those two men got together and developed something truly revolutionary. An electric traction engine.
An electric traction engine?
Yes. Something like a steam locomotive, but without the coal tender, or the steam, for that matter, but with electric power instead. And the engine got its electricity from the tracks, that is, from the rails connecting the railway station and the building site. It was revolutionary. And on the 16th of May 1881, the first electricity in the entire world made its first journey, in Lichterfelde.
The first elektrische. Do you mean the tram?
Yes. We call the new trams the elektrische because they're no longer horse-drawn trams. They run on electricity. It's wonderful. In the beginning, the very first electric tram in the world only operated between the Anhalt railway station and the cadet school. The young cadets, the candidates for officer rank, were probably grateful to Siemens because it meant they could quickly nip to the station and even into Berlin whenever they wanted to have some fun. And over time, Lichterfelde has continued to grow. These days, it's even called Großlichterfelde, Great Lichterfelde. It's expanded towards the north and the west, that is, right to this spot where we're walking now. And that's why the electric tram line was extended to the Potsdam railway station, where we met earlier.
So, at that time, Lichterfelde had the most innovative transport system in the world.
Yes, it did. We also have an omnibus and a steam-powered tram line running out to Teltow. All the latest developments. And electric trams are operating in all the major cities now, in Germany, in Europe, and even in America. But here, in Lichterfelde, is where it all started. Well, knock me down with a feather. Karlplatz is almost unrecognisable. It's a children's paradise, with all this newfangled equipment for the children to romp about on. And they've even put a few benches around the sides for the nursemaids and governesses.
Well, more likely for the parents, the fathers and mothers, or the grandparents.
What did you say? The parents or grandparents?
Yes, of course.
How's that supposed to work? What father or grandfather would waste his time sitting around with his children here in the square? No. That's up to the nannies. And if people don't have their own nanny, then it's up to the housemaids.
Well, these days, things are perhaps a little different.
Actually, it's a good idea to have something like this, especially at Karlplatz. Because, take a look at the buildings around the square. Those are the villas for rent. They're big, stylish houses too, but meant to house several families.
I see. So that's where the families live who can't afford a villa of their own.
That's exactly right.
And their children don't have far to go if they want to have a great time playing outside in the fresh air. In terms of urban planning, that's a persuasive concept. And when the children have had enough of playing and romping around, you can head on into the cafe and have a cup of tea or hot chocolate.
But Alex, what are you thinking? Head on into the cafe? As a housemaid? With the children? Tut tut, what strange ideas you come up with.
Well, I was just thinking.
To spend your miserable wages on expensive coffee or tea? It's simply unthinkable. And just imagine, if you get caught by the master or mistress, sitting idly in a cafe, and worse still, having involved the children in your idleness. No. You need to get that idea out of your head. Nothing like that would ever happen in a decent family. At least not where the children and the maids are concerned. We'd better move on. Here at the end of the square, turn left into Friedrichstrasse. There are a few more particularly beautiful little towers and gables to be seen there. And at the next crossroads, oh, well, you're going to be amazed.
My goodness me, just look at those buildings. The most beautiful red brick Gothic, you might think, with impressive stepped gables.
Well, the building in the middle has them, yes. But as to the buildings either side, all I'm going to say is, towers are plenty.
Yes, you're right. Yet more little towers. But the whole complex looks like a medieval monastery.
It isn't, though. It's only just been built, in 1898, to be precise. A real gem, right here in Lichterfelde. And a charitable one at that.
A charitable gem? How so?
Well, it's a beautiful building that also serves a charitable purpose. It's a home for the unmarried daughters of the high and mighty, by which I mean Prussian civil servants and officers, of course. So for women who are unable to earn their own living once the head of the family has gone to his eternal reward.
Because they hadn't learned a trade or profession.
That's just how it is for women from good families. And they can't become maids either, of course. Someone has to take care of them. In any case, this home was established by a very important man, Christian Rother. Have you ever heard of him?
No, sorry.
Well, Christian Rother was a really wonderful man. I'll tell you all about him as we walk along. To the right, towards Kommandantenstrasse. Now, this chap, Christian Rother, he was from Silesia. His parents were small farmers, but Rother was sharp. He worked and worked and worked and eventually rose to become head of the Prussian Maritime Trading Company, president of the Prussia's central bank, the Königliche Hauptbank, Privy Minister of State and whatnot.
So Rother was an important bank director?
Yes, exactly. At the Prussian Central Bank, a real bigwig, one of the nation's most important figures. But that was in Prussia in around 1820 or so. Yet Rother never forgot where he came from. He knew what it felt like to be poor, and he had plenty of ideas about how to fight poverty. Well, not really fight, not like the socialists, with social upheaval or anything like that, but on a small scale.
Oh, okay.
He made sure that people were decently paid and that everyone could live on what they earned, even the little people. And for the women I mentioned, he established the Rother Foundation. Berlin was the first to have one of his homes, and then, long after the empire had been founded and after the price of land in Berlin had skyrocketed, it was all sold off at a huge profit. And then they built a new home here, in beautiful, tranquil Lichterfelde.
In the historicist red brick Gothic style.
Except Christian Rother himself didn't live to see it. By then he was long dead, but the home still bears his name, Rother Stift, Rother Foundation.
Somehow this small, triangular open space looks familiar. Did we pass it earlier?
Ah, of course not. But you're right in one respect. Triangular open spaces like this one are everywhere in Lichterfelde. That was deliberate. Carsten laid them out that way.
Oh, interesting.
Just a few decades ago, all this was just stands of spruce and sand dunes, a sandy wasteland in the Mark Brandenburg. And to turn it into a stylish villa estate, Carsten laid out streets, and sometimes, when three streets met, arranged them so that they enclosed a triangular open space.
At the point where the axes crossed.
Very nicely put. Anyway, the houses surrounding these open spaces are always especially big and beautiful.
The villas for rent.
For example, and the residents can get together in the piazza for a chat. Nice and practical.
It also strengthens the sense of community.
Well, if you like, yes. As Lichterfelde residents, we all stick together really well. Somehow, we share a sense of belonging, that's true. And that's what all the city dwellers envy us for, the ones who come to Lichterfelde in the summer months or at weekends. Because in the big city, where people are anonymous and nobody knows anybody else, it's easy to feel lonely.
But not here in Lichterfelde.
No, no way. Not in the slightest. But now I really have to hurry to make sure I can still do my shopping. And anyway, come on, we'll go down Kadettenweg, here on the left, until we get to Curtiusstraße. My goodness, Mr. Architecture Student, we've been so busy chatting we completely lost track of time. And all I really wanted to do was... But then I... Anyway, my mistress will be seriously displeased if I arrive home this late without even doing the shopping.
But, Martha, your mistress is long... I mean, your... and the family you work for, all that is more than 100 years gone.
Oh, you with your tales of 100 years in the future. Oh, my master and mistress are strict, but fair, and I certainly don't want to fall out with them. Who knows if I'll be able to find another good position that quickly. That's why I have to leave you now, Alex, and get a move on. If I turn right into Curtiusstrasse, I might still be able to do my shopping.
Into Curtiusstrasse?
Yes, exactly. Ernst Curtius. He was another academic and a professor. He led the excavations in Olympia. Anyway, there are some shops on Curtiusstrasse, and I'll just nip down there before I... Oh my goodness, I'm going to be in such trouble with the mistress. You can find your own way back to the railway, can't you?
No problem.
Straight ahead and then right. You can even see it from here. Goodbye, Mr. Architecture Student.
Goodbye, Martha. And off she went, our Martha. Gone as quickly as she arrived. What a whirlwind. But someone who was really familiar with this beautiful villa estate and the people who lived here. I couldn't have done better for my bachelor's thesis. A real insider's view into the lives of the residents of Lichterfelde a century ago. But before you go back to the S-Bahn stop, carry on walking straight ahead between the new buildings to the end of the cul-de-sac. At the far end on the left, there's something I'd like to show you. A kind of roof. Because that's linked with a completely different piece of Berlin's history. Yes, that's what it sounded like here a few decades ago. Long after Martha and the time when the villa estate was built. I'm talking about the period when there was a wall in Berlin and the city was split into 4 occupation zones. Perhaps you remember from your history lessons, US troops were stationed in the south of West Berlin. And they'd set up a military railway station here at the S-Bahn stop Lichterfelde West. If you look diagonally to your right, you can see the regular S-Bahn platform for civilian traffic in the distance. And here, where we're standing now, was the platform for the Berlin duty trains. Those trains transported military personnel and their families, and of course supplies, back and forth between Berlin and the US military bases in West Germany. In the parlance of the time, they operated as transit traffic, passing through the GDR by the shortest route, which was to the Helmstedt border crossing. On that transit route, they were hauled by a locomotive operated by the Deutsche Reichsbahn, which was under GDR control. So, a US military train with an East German locomotive. I imagine that must have given rise to some diplomatic confusion. But that's what it was like when Berlin was a divided city. And somehow, the US railway station here in Lichterfelde West carried on the estate's old military traditions, don't you think? Because soldiers and their families were already a feature of the Lichterfelde street scene during the time of the German Reich. Of the entire long platform, only this single canopy survives. The rest had to make way for the car park and the supermarket. And that's our route back to the S-Bahn stop Lichterfelde West. I mean, to the station served by the Potsdam Railway, as our dear Martha would say. You can see the pale brickwork of the tower from here. And now it's time for me to say goodbye too. Thank you for joining me on my adventure exploring Lichterfelde with our no-nonsense Martha. Local history at first hand, you might say. Stories about Carsten the Investor, about Gustav Lilienthal and his castle houses, about Lydia Rabinowitsch Kempner, who did research into tuberculosis, about the poet Heinrich Seidel and his rapturous verses about Lichterfelde, or about Christian Rother, who didn't live to see his foundation move south to Lichterfelde. And, of course, all the little towers and turrets and the proud Lichterfelde residents with their smart houses and front gardens. Feel free to visit again. I certainly will, to enjoy the tranquil atmosphere of the old villa estate, with or without Martha.